love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam, hands-free, from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to preview this weekend's Miami Grand Prix. And when I say we, I mean all three of us, as I am, of course, joined by none other than Mr. Timo Albus Daly and Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
I'm suddenly feeling cheered up. How are you?
I'm not doing too badly, especially given the news that you've just broken to me, which has brightened my mood considerably. Ellie Mae, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
We'll get to that news in a minute. We'll dive into our predictions preview and all that later on. But there has pretty much been a maelstrom of news from the world of motorsport, let alone F1, in the sort of 2 weeks, essentially, since we had the Chinese Grand Prix. So we'll kick off with some of the bigger stories of the week. And the first one, which is the easiest to digest, because it's actually turned out to be relatively simple, is Ferrari has a new title sponsor, HP, the printer and computer company, and they'll be running a one-off blue highlighted livery in Miami, and it looks shite.
Yeah, not really much to say there. I kind of thought as soon as they announced a special livery for Miami, I was already not interested because it's Miami, it's going to be dull, they can't even afford water. So the race suits were like, if you'd put that blue on the car, would have been interesting. Never mind.
Yeah, I too was excited for the concept of a blue Ferrari, something harking back to the old sort of NART days, the North American race teams, the blue Ferrari. It was something so special. Like, this was a perfect chance to do it. And they went, we'll give you some stripes and a little bit on the wing. And I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah, of all the things they could have done, they did that.
Yeah.
It wasn't even the bare minimum.
Anyway, what it does mean for Ferrari, though, is they now have a title sponsor. They have a lot of money coming in from that, which means that they might be able to offer a certain Mr. Newey an interesting contract, because, of course, we heard today that he is now set to leave Red Bull. His contract terminates in spring 2025, and he'll be stepping back from F1 development at the team with immediate effect, attending a few races here and there, but mostly he'll be focusing his work on the RB17 hypercar project. This is something that's going to be akin to Aston Martin's Valkyrie. It's going to be looking to go into endurance racing alongside the things like the Ferrari 499. It's an interesting concept that Red Bull have been sort of working on for some time, and it's a bit of Newey's pet project. So they've sort of put him on gardening leave with that to focus on. And some of this is likely following on from the as yet unresolved case around team principal Christian Horner. We know that Newey likes a calm and conflict-free work environment. He's moved on from teams previously for such a reason. So it suggests that there's still something rumbling on in the background with the power struggle at the top of Red Bull. There also further draws into question Max's ongoing contract. Will he stick around moving forward, or is he likely to go somewhere else, especially now he might not have the best car? Crucially, it does ask the question, where does Newey go? Ferrari, as we've already mentioned, where he'll be with a reformed team that's on the up, that'll have Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc driving for them. Last time he worked out of the country, pretty much both times, his marriage broke down, but Ferrari said they'll accommodate him for whatever he wants. And he said previously that the one driver he's always wanted to work with is Lewis Hamilton. He's also sort of wanted to work with Fernando Alonso, but that's ruled out. We'll get to that in due course. Interestingly, Frederic Vasseur was reportedly in London yesterday for a meeting with Newey. So we'll see what happens from there. That's speculative. That's people just reporting the fact that Fred Vasseur was in London. He might have just gone to Madame Tussauds. We don't know.
It's perhaps why Ferrari have now got HP as a new sponsor, because Adrian likes everything to be printed out. So they've gone ahead and showed their commitment to him by having a printing company as a sponsor.
Yeah, he likes having his emails.
We've printed you a new contract and everything. Sign here.
Yeah, and also HP do scanners, crucially, so when he does his lovely pencil drawings, they can be scanned in and someone can then digitize them. So that makes a lot of sense.
Do you think he would like the politics of Ferrari?
I think the politics.
I think Fred's clever enough to navigate all of those politics so that he wouldn't have to deal with them. He's like, here's your wing of the Ferrari factory. You stay there. You do what you want. Let me worry about the rest of it. What do you need? Let me get you a butler, and they will take care of it all for you. I think at this point, they're kind of like, Fred will do whatever he needs to do. He's proven that because he's managed to lure Hamilton away. And this is to a team that, okay, yes, it's Ferrari, but haven't won a championship since 2008, and that was a constructor's title. And yes, he's managed to get Lewis Hamilton over there. So I think other people at Ferrari are very much trusting him to, like, okay, we'll do what you want to do. You clearly have an idea of what you're doing here.
He'll come into it with enough sway to sort of get what he needs from the team and then sort of do what he needs to do, and the team will sort of leave him to it, I think, is very much the concept. McLaren are an option. They have a solid driver lineup, but sort of lack a bit of design direction, and they have a constant shuffling of personnel at the moment. Newey gets on well with Brown. He stated this previously to the media, but he doesn't feel that team as a whole has the right push and setup to advance, which is interesting sort of reading into things that he stated previously within the past sort of 8 months, I think, is sort of relevant enough to take from. Aston Martin, we'd already touched on with regards to Fernando Alonso, and while they are pouring a lot of money into development, and it is still UK-based and round the corner from his old office, like it is barely 15 minutes drive away, he's got Fernando Alonso driving at his peak right now. Again, a great draw. The next step in Aston Martin's quest is to become world champions, and while Lawrence's blank check is tempting, Adrian sort of has spoken previously on fearing being a bit of a pawn in Stroll's get-rich-off-the-profits setup. And while a lot of Red Bull sort of engineers, mechanics, and designers have gone to Aston Martin with the lure of the big money, Adrian's not in it for the money these days. He's had so many high-paying gigs. He has got a sort of a life and a career set up.
So if he's got a yacht custom built for him, I think he's sorted on the money.
Yeah, he's doing this for the passion. And if you're doing it for the passion, you're sort of drawn to Ferrari, really.
Even if he doesn't go to Aston Martin, in some ways it would make sense if he did, because you think Aston Martin have poached a fair few Red Bull team personnel, including the aerodynamicist that was under Newey. I can't remember his name now. But so that could come to an advantage if he was thinking, well, I already know I can work with some of this team. I could probably fit in kind of quite well there.
Well, that's what I wrote in my notes. It's kind of Newey to Ferrari makes the most sense for the heart, and Newey to Aston Martin makes the most sense for the mind. So it's kind of, there's equal balances there. But I think Ferrari is where everyone kind of wants to see him, because you've just... It's rare you get this kind of opportunity. You do, anyway. Mate. I know you love Williams, but it's not going to happen. So you're going to go to Ferrari. And you just think, when else do you get this perfect combination of a seven-time world champion, everyone's favourite team, including Andy Mays, if she's really honest with herself, and put them together in a team that's had such a long, dry spell, shall we say, that it could make fireworks happen. And it kind of... just asks more questions of everything else, because does Newey leaving mean is the beginning of the end of at least this era for Red Bull? How much longer is it then before Horner and or Marco leaves the team? Who do you get to replace Newey? Because you need to get someone in there to sort your Red Bulls out going forward. Does Verstappen then leave, and where does he go? Mercedes is kind of the only real option there, unless you want to go really bold, which I like to do, when you go to Aston Martin and have him and Alonso team up there and kind of have that as the next step up towards trying to be a championship-winning team. And then in the meantime, you kind of have this gap at Red Bull, and potentially if Verstappen left as early as the end of this year, you've got some really interesting stuff potentially for 25 and 26 straight off the bat there. With McLaren coming up the ranks, you've got, let's say Verstappen goes to Mercedes, you've got him and Russell in a car that they can get the maximum out of. You've got Lewis in a Ferrari. Potentially, you've got Perez and Ricciardo, for argument's sake, in a Red Bull, both of which thinking it's your one shot at a car that is going to be as dominant as you're going to be able to guarantee it. Won't be as powerful as the last couple of years, but it's going to be the next best thing. And this is your potentially one shot at winning a title before the new regs, because you don't know how good that's going to go for Red Bull. And you might actually have a championship fight going, especially if you then stick signs in the Aston Martin with Alonso.
It's set up such a fantastic silly season, because while he's not a driver on the market, drivers understand not just what he can design, but there's also his ability as not a performance coach, but as a race engineer, his ability to understand Grand Prix racing and how it's constructed and how a weekend comes together and how a team operates. He's been doing this in some form or another since the 80s, really, when you look back to his early dabbling with March and the fact that he spent so long doing IndyCar, which was such an intense season and still is to a large part. Like, he understands the dynamics of an open cockpit single seater racing car and how to extract the most from both that and a driver. Like, I know Ellie Mays read his book. I'm currently listening to it as well, and I think we'll both agree that his view, yeah, as well. So I think we can all agree that he's a man that understands the sport as a whole so well that he's such a sort of lusted after concept for so many of the teams on the grid. And we've mentioned sort of Mercedes. It's not too far of a move for him sort of practicality wise, and the car does need a big design overhaul. It could be a good project for him. The problem there is that he doesn't get on well with Toto Wolff. Their team is starting to struggle at the top as well. A lot of people are coming to sort of disagreements with Toto on the way the team is managed, the structure, the hierarchy. And equally, he wouldn't be able to turn around this year's car in enough time to have a good 2025. He'd then essentially have a flop year working towards the regs. So there's a lot of obstacles in his way there. The only other logistical option or reasonable option is, as Ellie May would love, Williams, where there's every chance they can start making steps forward. A clean slate design is something that they could do with, but at
champion 2026.
Well, it's kind of what you said earlier. Adrian Newey has enough dollar by now that he can afford to have a cut in the pay.
You'd go down that route.
Well, I also have another route, because it would make obviously a nice little project for Williams, and you know, imagine him being the man that makes Williams great again, or you know, one of the people behind it. And in some ways, I actually think it almost makes the most sense, because where Williams currently are, they're still building their team. And what worked well was when he was at Williams last time, when he was there, Patrick Head was happy to shift the internal structure of the FW14, which ultimately made the FW14 be a championship winning car, because you know, everyone was working together. They looked at what Newey wanted in terms of aerodynamics, and then they just sort of made everything else around him. And Newey could probably enter Williams now and have that power to build a team around him and what he wants, and they'll listen to him. And I'm not sure any other team has that flexibility to do that.
It's the ability to listen to him and sort of bend to his beck and will, as it were, without wanting to make him sound like sort of a domineering figure, but he's quite sort of mildly spoken in that regard. He sort of goes in and suggests things and you listen to him.
Well, that's why he suits Ferrari so well. He's got that little mafiosa thing. If I'm just going to make a suggestion, but you should probably do it, otherwise I'll kill you.
Speak quietly, carry a very big stick in it. But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of options, and yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. There's been rumors and reports coming around on social media and through the sort of journalist channels suggesting that he has turned down Aston Martin. So that's not a pipeline. One of the things we did when obviously this news first broke, we put a bunch of polls out on social media, on our Instagram and Twitter. Unsurprisingly, HaasChap said that he'd like to see him move to Haas, which does beg the interesting question. If he did that, Ollie Bearman, 2026 world champion. Rookie world champion, or 25 world champion for that matter.
It would be so.
You've been stealing whatever I snort in the mornings to make bold predictions.
Yes. Just imagine it.
It would be so annoying for Nico Hülkenberg.
It would be. It would be very typical of Nico Hülkenberg as well to
move. This is what I was worried about, because obviously he's moved to Audi now, or will be for next year. And what is a solid move to go there in some regards, you've got to be a little bit worried, and you hope it works out for him, because Haas are showing potential promise at the moment, and it would be just his kind of luck that he leaves the team that has landed at the back of the majority of their existence to then suddenly get good and capitalize on the 2026 regs as they looked like they had done at the start of 22 in Bahrain, and then obviously did their usual thing. And then to be replaced by Bearman of all drivers, who makes the most sense, I think, out of everyone, because it's K-Max days. You've got a rookie who's shown a lot of promise. You saw it in Saudi Arabia. Bottas, no. Joe should maybe stay where he is. Or Joe. Ocon is kind of there, but I don't think that would be likely. Signs, you he's going to Aston Martin. I'll figure that one out later. I just need to figure out how to, I need Stroll to just have another bicycling accident for a kind of David Maluka style. I need to get some notes from him so I know how badly to do it. And then that's fine. So the pathway is clear there. So just keep it like that. And then you've got this nice balance of youth and experience. And hopefully Haas do well, but not too well.
I'll say the final point on Ollie Bearman. I think obviously we saw how stressed his dad was in the pit garages at Ferrari in Saudi Arabia. Can we imagine that when his son, as a rookie, is fighting for the title? It's coming down to the final race.
How pissed would Piastri be?
Really pissed, but Ollie Bearman sends a lunge down the inside into Turn 5 in Abu Dhabi. He makes it. The camera's cut away for an instant replay of his dad going, oh my Jesus. And Ollie Bearman, 2025 Formula One world champion as a rookie. He would do the thing that Lewis Hamilton wasn't quite able.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with three Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
To do, we would have a British rookie world champion. How fantastic would that be? Anyway, we're getting sidetracked. We've already mentioned Nico Hülkenberg. Of course, he's announced that he is leaving Haas at the end of the year, and he's moving to Sauber, Audi, State Kick, Alfa Romeo, whatever you want to call them, for 2025. The real question, though, is who is going to partner him? We've sort of dabbled with Sainz. Timo thinks he's off to Aston Martin. Bottas, we don't really think he's going to be around for much longer. Zhou, I can't see him being there. Norris is a bold concept. I think we might see Ocon there. Science is taking too long and deliberating too much. Ocon has reportedly been spoken to by Sauber.
Well, why would Science be deliberating? He's going to Aston Martin, and Ocon's going to be trying to get into that Mercedes until Verstappen goes. They're an Alpine or sort their shit out at some point, and they'd be better off with someone, just someone else, to be honest. I mean, Ocon's fine as a driver, but I think if you're... you're only as good as your last kind of season, your last kind of race. And he's had kind of, I mean, yeah, Monaco was him, wasn't it? That was his podium. And let's face it, as good qualifying, crazy race, you've got to be there to take the most out of it. But aside from that, he's not really done much over the last few years. So you'd maybe want to put your faith in someone else.
Yeah. I think, so there's what? I forgot what I was going to say. With signs, you've got, what the two options that we've mainly heard of have been Red Bull or what will be Audi. I think Aston Martin maybe, but perhaps now with Newey leaving Red Bull, that could have made Sainz's decision a bit easier as to where he wants to go. Maybe he decides I want to take that risk then with Audi, but I guess then what comes with that risk is it's, you know, they are still at the minute like Sauber, Alfa Romeo, Stake. It's not gonna be
a quick turnaround.
No, it's gonna be a huge uphill battle that's gonna take, I would have thought, years for them to be sort of, I guess, where both Sainz and Hülkenberg really want them to be, or where Audi even want them to be. This isn't gonna be like, oh, Audi is suddenly coming in and we're gonna be on it. I think it's going to be a lot more than that.
Yeah, I think Audi hopes they're going to be able to pull a Braun with this, but I don't think you can do that with the technicalities of the modern car and how difficult they are to fine-tune with the ground effects. You can't just simply rock up and go, we're going to do a Braun, especially after however many years we've had of these ground effect cars with Adrian Newey designing sort of the foremost of their sort of dominators. You can't just simply rock up to that after everyone's done sort of 5 years of development and go, you know what, guys, we've cracked it in one go. Here we go, fellas, do this. Because it just won't work that way. It's a big ask from Audi, and I think it's scaring a lot of drivers away from signing that contract. Hülkenberg is basically sort of rocking a hard place. Audi Haas, it doesn't really matter for him. He's enjoying it. He's driving an absolute peak at the moment. He might as well go somewhere that's got a bit of a chance to move forwards. And yeah, Audi have been sort of quite ahead on their engine development. We know nothing of their chassis. We know nothing of who's really there doing aerodynamics and engineering. It is such an unknown at the moment. And I think it's what's keeping a lot of drivers, certainly Sainz, erring on the side of caution.
That that would be my dream team, though, wouldn't it? Hulkenberg and Sainz as a lineup, and Adrian Newey, the aerodynamicist.
We've had Hulkenberg and Sainz before. Like, we're talking 2018.
Yeah. Renault?
Yeah, but now it can do something.
Yeah, now it'll be a quick car because Adrian Newey's had his HBs out. Anyway, we'll move on from the potential of who's sitting next to Hulkenberg to Aston Martin, who have lodged a petition for a review into the penalty handed to Alonso in China. This would see his 10-second penalty in the sprint overturned and equally the 3 penalty points applied to a super license. This is all still ongoing. This is just sort of very much the headline of it. We don't know what any results are, if there have been any yet. But I think crucially when it comes to penalty points, great to keep your license clear. I think for the 10-second penalty in the sprint, I don't know if it's going to earn him any more points, whether they'll be able to sort of reconstruct a race.
It's only going to be a couple, I think. And I think with this sort of thing, it's just do it on the weekend, do it on the Monday, Tuesday afterwards. Otherwise, leave it out. At the end of the day, at this point, get over it. You've got penalised. Just go and do better in a different race and stop moaning 2 weeks later. Get over it. You're Aston Martin. Just go and don't put yourself in that position in the first place.
It does seem a little harsh, the penalty, though, I think.
Hmm. Well, yeah, but then complain about it at the time. Don't wait 2 weeks and go, oh, yeah, by the way, we'll do this now.
We'll likely get back to...
The problem is if you're lodging a petition for review with a sprint weekend, it's like you can't almost do it immediately because you're focusing on the race.
Well, no, I'm not saying do it on the Sunday, but like do it at least by the following Thursday. Don't wait an extra week on top of that and then go, oh, by the way, what's your draw game ready for Miami? We're still going to complain about this thing. Just get it in early and do it. It just seems silly and kind of... I think I'm just being a bit bitter with all the IndyCar stuff. We've had that dragged on for so long afterwards that we don't need more of it. Just kind of, for lack of a better phrase, mama, deal with it and just draw a line under it, do better in your next race.
We'll get to dealing with penalties a little while after the race in due course on this podcast, but we'll turn our attention quickly to Formula E. Obviously, this is coming off the back of their Monaco weekend, and it was fairly interesting. A huge amount of overtakes, if you've seen the statistics. It sort of proves that you can race around Monaco, but you just need to make the cars a bit smaller. The important news is, of course, they've got rookie tests coming up. And the headline one that we've picked out is Marta Garcia, who will be testing with ERT. And she'll run later this month. She's the first female to test in 3 years, or we thought she was going to be just the first female to test, because, of course, Alice Powell has also got the sign-up. She'll be back in the car, in a single-seater car, for the first time in 2 years, driving for Envision, which is interesting that last time out she wasn't allowed to do it for not being a rookie. And there's a huge debacle surrounding that. Maybe it's because she hasn't raced in a while, so they've sort of reinstated her rookie status. We'll figure that one out as we go along. Garcia, meanwhile, will be joined by touring car driver Mikel Azcona in the running, and she'll get a chance to do some sim work beforehand, so she's not going in blind. Mahindra have announced that they are running Kushmini and Frederick Vesti as well in their rookie tests. So some interesting faces and names appearing. Certainly Fred Vesti, who we haven't really heard from since F2. So, yeah, kind of quiet for him. Kushmini, though, interesting. Still running very nicely in F2, I believe. I'm thinking of the right guy. Yes, I am. And, interesting to see that he might be making some pathways forwards with his career.
Well, it's just nice to see Mahindra not hiring an AI to drive their car for them, really, isn't it? Marta Garcia is the well, you see the farce that they didn't have a Abu Dhabi last weekend. They'd probably try it. Marta Garcia is obviously the headline there. I mean, as well as Alice Carver, that was late days. Nice to see her back in the car. Not sure what her future is in terms of racing, but with Marta Garcia, it's really nice, because the only thing I'll say on this is that it seemed more like a step up rather than a step sideways that Brekka was. So hopefully this is going to go well for her. And admittedly, the bar is low in some respects, because they're driving with one hand tied behind their back as an FE team at the moment. They've only really got Seti Camera to do anything good for them. So nice to see. And yeah.
We'll see how that develops moving forwards. Of course, we'll touch on quickly into Monaco and the Formula E, because we try and keep a track of Formula 2 and Formula 3 and F1 Academy while we're at it. And of course, we saw Taylor Barnard make the step up for Sam Bird, who broke his hand, and racing for McLaren. Mitch Evans brought home a Jaguar and Kiwi 1-2 around the Principality, but of course everyone was really focusing on the little boy who climbed from 22nd to 14th, rather, which is quite good really for an initial run in Formula E in a race, and just sort of opens up his prospects after F2 no end. So it's pretty tidy run from him.
Yeah, pretty much basically what happened with all the other drivers we've talked about lately in terms of young drivers, just go in, don't cock it up, stay out of trouble and get the job done and you will be golden. Do your Rabassa, do your Wheelchair, don't do anything major, don't try anything fancy, just drive.
If Sam Bird didn't have bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck at all.
This is very,
very true.
Who said that in the commentary? I feel like someone
Martin Brundle. Yeah, that's his line for Bottas.
Yeah, very much so. It was a pretty decent weekend last weekend, actually, to be a rookie with Linus Lundqvist actually making it to the podium in Alabama. After a chaotic opening stint for the field, a mannequin falling onto the track. Honestly, go find the clips. F1 could never. Linus held it together and chased home Scotty Mack and Will Power to the line in a two-lap sprint to the end after a late safety car. But that's not really the only news from IndyCar. It's a wild time, really, to be Callum Aylor or Teo Pourchaire. After a mixed Alabama GP where Teo was spun by Pato O'Ward and then sort of shunted back into the right orientation in a very weird double tap from Pato. He drove well in really his only second weekend in the series, and it looks like he'll have more to come as David Malukas has been released from his contract with Arrow McLaren. His wrist injury isn't likely to see him back on track for much of this year. More gratingly, he had only just joined the team in September, so never actually got to turn a wheel in anger wearing orange. Details on who will replace David are yet to be wholly confirmed, but it's not the biggest drama in IndyCar in the past few weeks, which of course we've already hinted at. This is of course Team Penske being hit with penalties post St. Pete, so we're now three races down the line. This came out just ahead of Alabama, and an in-depth review a month later saw the number two car of Joseph Newgarden and the number three 33 Scott McLaughlin cars disqualified, while the number 12 entry of Will Power was hit by a 10-point penalty. Why? Push to pass infringements after a race restart. Essentially, the background to this is they've been trialing hybrid systems, they'd left a bit of software in there, and had accidentally been triggering push to pass too early after race restarts. All three cars were hit with a $25,000 fine and a forfeit on all their prize money from the race. What this also meant is that Pato O'Ward was credited with the race win, despite never actually leading a lap of that, interestingly.
Fun fact from the IndyCar podcast that I now do, where I'm getting to learn all these fun little bits from IndyCar history. The last time a driver won an IndyCar race without leading a lap was in 1929. And that was because the guy in first place was killed.
Oh.
And they stopped the race.
Oh, that's not a very fun fact at all.
Well, not fun in that regard, no, but it'd be good for a pub quiz.
Yeah, who was the driver that won it and what car?
I cannot remember off the top of my head right now, but I'll go and check these things out and let you know in Miami Review, because we've got other things we want to talk about right now, so I don't want to get sidetracked with that. But I just thought, like, there's gaps in records and there's gaps in records. And I just kind of, that's different.
The key thing I wanted to take away from all of this was the fact that IndyCar and all the teams and organizations surrounding it have actually been really clear with uploading graphics to social media and explaining it all and going into the nitty-gritty details about what went wrong, why it went wrong, and what they've done to prevent it happening next time. And this is just something I doubt you'd get from Formula One, this sort of openness and clarity to exactly what's happened with what team, driver, car, system to cause a certain failure to result in points being applied. Like, you have to delve deep into the FIA website to go into their sort of files archive to pull up PDF documents to get a vague understanding of it, whereas IndyCar just went, here's a graphic on Instagram, that's why we did it, cheers, next race. And
team statement, driver statements, explanation, job done. This happened. We're all frustrated as well because it's like 2 months later, but it's done. It's not going to happen again. And all the other teams are going to be bloody sure that they're double checking, triple checking all of this now to make sure it definitely doesn't happen again. We can move on. And even then, it was only Newgarden really who had the problem with everything, because Scott just came out of the pits and just went, right, I'll just get my points back. He went from like P22 from having 0 points straight up to P9 again. So like, that's not too shabby for a weekend's work.
No, it's something I'd like to see in Formula One. And equally, NASCAR does it as well. When we had sort of roof rails and all sorts implemented on sort of the new NASCARs, and then they were like, no, you can't run that. And they explained it. There was even a video of like one of their tech guys explaining why you can't do that. I'm like, could we please just have a morsel of that in Formula One? Anyway, speaking of NASCAR, interestingly, Richard Petty is coming back to Goodwood Festival of Speed. I'm very excited for this. He'll be running his 1970 Plymouth Superbird up the hill with his son, too. This all celebrates 75 years of the Petty dynasty in motorsport. If you're a fan of the Cars films franchise, you'll recognize the 70 Plymouth Superbird as the blue one. I've forgotten his name completely now. Strip Withers, there we go. Moving on to some proper F1 news once more. And Gunther Steiner is taking Haas to court over money he's still owed and for continuing to use his likeness in publicity materials. A little bit thin on details on this one. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out once we've got more of them. And of course, we'll set our legal eagle Ellie Mae onto it. But early thoughts, if I might press you to them, offhand?
So I think from what I've obviously gathered, he's filed a lawsuit in North Carolina for breach of contract relating to unpaid commission from 2021 to 2023. And he's claiming that Haas are using his image without authorization, sort of exploiting his image by continuing to sell merchandise and maintaining his presence on their website. Had a look at their website. They've obviously taken everything Gunther down, which is to be expected. Obviously it's under US law, which is different to the one in the obviously in the UK. Don't study US law at all, but I guess it will mainly be down to contract law, whether it says in his contract that he should be paid said commission that he said he's not being paid for. Unauthorized use of his personal image, I guess, is something that might perhaps be a bit difficult. I suppose you can probably go down the contract route as well. What it says on his contract, whether he gets paid royalties from his merchandise and whether, because now the contract's severed between Haas and Gunther, whether he's still entitled to those royalties if they're still sort of using his image to and getting money from that merchandise, because I guess at the end of the day, they're still gaining a monetary benefit regardless. So depends whether he should be entitled to that, but I guess we'll see.
I just want to see it succeed purely for the reason of afterwards he will then join up with an insurance or a lawyer company to make an advert saying, accident at work, that's not your fault, or someone used your likeness and you didn't give them permission. Call these people, they'll sort it out for you.
I guess as well, you see all the time when F1 drivers are leaving a team, you'll have the merch will still probably be up on like that website and they'll have it at a discounted value. And, you know, we always think that's kind of allowed. So then will that now be scrapped? And then what happens to the clothing? Does it just get chucked instead of people could just buy it at a discounted rate so it doesn't get wasted?
What's going to happen to all those unstalled Stoffel Van Dorn McLaren shirts that they've still got on the F1 website and still can't sell? Like, what's going to happen to the Stoff merch?
Maybe they'll just do it like Clarkson's Farm did, and here's an apple for 20 quid and you get a free bit of Gunther merch with it.
Yeah, for every, like, thing you buy, you simply get a t-shirt with Gunther Steiner's face on it.
Yeah, you don't have a choice, it's just that's how you get rid of it. But we'll find out about that later.
We'll find out about that later. But of course, North Carolina, not too far from Florida, which gets us back to Miami. And of course, F1 Academy is racing this weekend. It will be their second race of the season. And we've got another wild card, as of course we need to have, which I'll get onto in a second. But of course, we've got Courtney Crone joining the grid for this weekend. 23-year-old meets the age restrictions for the series, so a step in the right direction after Saudi, but hasn't raced a single-seater since 2019. So interesting one there. I think she's been GT, isn't she, since? However,
so she's got a lot of experience in a range of disciplines, though, so she's kind of been trying out a little bit of everything, so that's nice. And so despite not really racing in single seats since 2019, like you say, it'll be interesting to see how she gets on, because like we say, it's always fun to get as much experience in different disciplines and different formulas as you can to see how that then helps you. So truly a wild card in that sense. And as you're hinting at, the wild card actually helps them get over the threshold needed to have enable the drivers to get super license points. And I think it's kind of a really neat solution to that. I don't know if you two are of the same mind, but it's just a nice way of providing the opportunity, get that wild element to it, and then just also get yourself over the line. I don't know, I just kind of like how that fits together.
It feels like sort of a last minute idea, but I like the fact that it's got a positive spin put to it. I think that's credit to the likes of sort of Susie Wolf and the sort of series adjudicators for figuring that one out.
I also wonder whether she, you know, has she not been doing single seated by choice, or is it because she couldn't access it?
Well, it was more cost.
Yeah. But she seems to be a good little racer. She came fourth last year in the IMSA BP Racing Sports Car Championship Challenge. Mm-hmm. So the 17th out of 28 in German Prototype Cup LMP3 series. So
yeah, she's no slouch.
She's keeping busy at least doing stuff. So. Yeah.
And equally, we look at Dorian Power, the fact that she came from doing GT and endurance racing and has sort of very quickly found her feet in F1 Academy. There's no reason to suggest that there isn't that transferability of skills needed. But of course, we've sort of hinted at it already in this podcast. It is time to delve into the big news that literally broke an hour before we recorded, whereas usually it breaks about sort of 10 minutes after we've recorded. So a nice change of pattern there. Timo, take it away.
Allow me, reading from NBC Sports, so I make sure I get all the facts correct here, but in one of the most fun twists to this story yet, 12 members of US Congress have sent a letter to Formula One and Liberty Media demanding why it's excluding Andretti Global from the sport, giving the American team powerful new allies in its bid to enter F1, and this is off the back of Mario Andretti having some friends in some very fun places by the looks of things. The bipartisan group of lawmakers, so he's actually got Congress to agree on something, so that's a bloody achievement in itself, have said that they've got concerns with the apparent anti-competitive actions that could prevent two American companies, Andretti Global and General Motors, from producing and competing in F1. They've invoked the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890 and sought answers for the rationale for rejecting the team, including whether it is designed to unfairly protect the European teams from competition in the US, where the fan base has grown dramatically. And just going a little bit there, yes, got one of the people going, it is unfair and wrong to attempt to block American companies from joining F1, which could also violate American antitrust laws. And it's just fun, but you've got pictures of Mario outside Congress on the steps with people from both sides of the aisle behind him, loads of reporters taking questions, all this sort of thing. And again, saying, we've got everything we need, we're keen to prove it, we're keen to do all this kind of thing. And it's kind of this fun thing of, we've just done the, you can bleed me if you want, but fuck you, we've got a lot of money and we're going to open up a Silverstone factory and we're going to enter F2 and F3 and do things that would prove it. And also, we've just got Congress involved to make this a bit more fun. And amusingly, he spoiled my wild prediction for this weekend, which at the bottom of the article, considering today's news that we had at the top of this episode, Andretti told NBC News that he would be interested in hiring Adrian Newey. That's a simple question. 100% yes, he said, with a smile. And my bold prediction this weekend was Adrian Newey announces he's signing with Andretti instead to help them get them over the line for the 2026 regulation, because wouldn't that just be a fun twist of, like, Ferrari couldn't get him, Andretti did, and Andretti just went to go to F1.
Of course, Andretti used to have him as sort of designers and race engineers when they were in IndyCar as well, so he's familiar with the Andretti family, but certainly if we need any more confidence building into Andretti and their F1 bid is, I'm going to keep this nondescript, but we know someone who is making a move from an existing Formula One team to Andretti as an engineer. So that is all I shall say on that matter. But yes, yeah, we've got an inside man who'll be able to give us a bit of a scoop on what's happening at the new Silverstone-based team there. I will talk to you about it off recording. But anyway, it's all of our news shoveled through. We've got a fair amount of it there in 40 minutes. But we'll dive into Miami. I feel like we should have like a Will Smith drop there to sort of play in. But I think we'd probably
get kind of works. Flagged.
Yeah.
Because the only fun fact I could think of was that Bad Boys 4 is coming out in June. And I kind of forgot that they'd made Bad Boys 4, to be honest. So I've just kind of, as long we'll see. But it's not a fun fact. But that's because there's not too much going for it. Aside from US Feeder Series, which I've been watching more of, and they've been based in Florida and the surrounding area. And that's quite fun to watch. So if we can get that into the F1 race and east into F1 Academy, then some of the weekend should be decent at least.
I was wondering how much actual hip hop you know to even have Will Smith in it.
I know enough about hip-hop to know that I can make a Will Smith reference to Miami and it will work. I wouldn't push my hip-hop knowledge much beyond that. It sort of gets a bit wavering at that point.
You know one of his songs, that's it.
It's enough. It's called for the Miami. Reference. I want to say that you could get away with Flo Rida and maybe even Pitbull for sort of Florida and Miami references, but I think
Jesse has never been more white.
Yes. Anyway, we'll move on from my abhorrent lack of hip-hop knowledge to our predictions, which prove that we don't know any grid spot knowledge. Ah, there you are. See, I need to figure something else that rhymes. There you are. Hip-hop. Pole position, Timo.
Just leave.
Yeah, sorry.
It's not Russell, because why not? Someone had to choose someone. I thought it would be different for a change.
Fair enough. Ellie May?
Verstappen.
Makes sense. I've gone for science because he's still looking quick, and I reckon the Ferrari one lap around Miami might be up there. And again, he's a man on a mission to try and find a job for next year. It might be making tea at Andretti at the way things are going, but we'll see what happens. Podiums. Ellie May and I have gone the same at the top. We've gone Hispanic for second, and we've gone for McLaren drivers present and past for third. Why have you gone Sainz Norris?
I don't know. I did this a while ago and I can't remember.
Fair enough. I went for Perez, Sainz. And Perez, I think, is a fairly obvious shout for second these days, and Sainz is a fairly good shout for third these days. So that was my logic there. Timo, go on, tell us your logic. Alonso, Perez, Piastri.
To be fair, same logic for Perez for P2. So it doesn't matter who's first. He's going to be second. It's not going to be third. So Fernando Alonso first, Perez second, Piastri third. Just because it would actually make Miami memorable for once. That's all I want.
Yeah, it would, I suppose, be quite memorable if Fernando Alonso... Surely he must be on for longest gap between race wins now. Because I know Kimi Raikkonen held that until like 2018 USGP. So
yeah.
Surely that's now Alonso's record to take. I'll check. We'll check that one.
Got third last year.
This is true.
Not first, though.
It's not first, though. It's not that record.
He's still on the podium. So if he takes a step forward,
he'll do it. Fastest lap, Timo, you're sticking with science until it happens. We know that I've gone for the very...
But it's because it was always going to happen at Miami. I've been saying it for months.
I was going to
say it for months for all the different races as well. So
not for Miami specifically.
Oh, you just misspoke all those 12 previous times.
Yes.
It's really. Like me... On New Year's Eve, every year going, next year will be my year. Never is.
There's a lot of 2024 left to go. Let's be optimistic for that side of things. I'm more optimistic for you having a better year than Sainz getting fastest lap for Timo. I've gone for Verstappen because it's an obvious choice and I need to score enough points to stay in sort of fighting distance of Ellie May in the championship for this. Ellie May, why are you going for Lando Norris?
Again, I did these a while back and I can't remember why. We've had such a...
I'll assume drugs.
Yeah, I don't even remember writing these. I don't even remember what day I did it. I just...
You've done so many rallies that you've sort of not been able to...
I think it was because we've had so many different people we might not have, but I feel like there has been variety enough in the fastest laps. So I was like, well, who's...
Not with Carlos bloody Sainz though, is it?
No.
Yeah, we'll wait and see what happens when it comes to fastest laps. The one thing that's really interesting, though, is our wild predictions. Timo, you've already sort of mentioned yours, which is Newey signing to Andretti, which I'm curious about. We'll wait and see what happens there.
It was bold, and yet somehow Mario made it slightly more likely today, and I'm not sure how I managed to do that one.
I don't know what universal hoodoo voodoo you've done or manifesting.
I may have inceptioned him slightly.
Is Mercury in retrograde for whatever New Year's?
No, this is so from the period
the
25th of April until like the 5th of May or something like that. This is the only period where no planets are in retrograde. Ah. We've just had Mercury,
and I'm taking full advantage.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think apparently this should then be like the week of like greatness where you'll feel your best because nothing's in retrograde.
What's it called when you get your star signs read and they sort of predict like your future? What's that called?
Horoscope.
What's Adrian Newey's horoscope for today? He is 26th of December, isn't he? So Capricorn.
He's a Capricorn, yeah.
That's so close to the end of the podcast without going off on a silly tangent.
Today, here we go. May 1st. This is your day to shine, Capricorn. Just make sure you don't do so at someone else's expense. You're feeling more self-confident than usual, which may be hard for you to believe. Nevertheless, you could be so focused on your agenda that you fail to see the subtle signs put out by those around you. Other people cry out for attention too. Make sure you shine some of your glorious light upon them. I think there's something interesting in that.
What's your word prediction?
Mine is Hulkenberg P5 or higher. I wrote P5 initially, and then went screw it or higher. I want to open up the podium and P4 to him.
I had gone for William's top 10, but I don't know whether to change it.
I think that's pretty bold considering recent performance.
No. Leave it, and what I'll do is I'll throw in a bonus. Leah Block gets in the top 10. You get your point.
Not F1.
She'll be doing really well if she gets into the top 10 in an F1 Academy car. But
I was about to say, this is not a good deal.
If she gets into the top 10 in F1 Academy, they've got two races across the weekend. You've got an extra sort of 150% chance of getting points for this, considering how close we are in the constructors, in the prediction standings. I don't know why I'm doing this for you, but I'm feeling nice.
I'm so confused. If you just decided that if Leia Block gets into the top 10, you're just going to give me a point.
Yeah, because she's driving a Williams car, isn't she?
Oh, so you're going to just... Well, I was going to change it.
I'm sorry, whatever the next race is. Imola.
What was it going to be otherwise?
I was going to change it so that I had... three people on the podium in it had to be within the correct order.
Ooh.
I was going to go Perez win, Alonso second, and Sainz third as my wild prediction.
Ooh.
But if you want to give me
you want points. You want points, stick with Williams. That's more likely to happen.
All right, Williams, top 10, including Leia Block.
Yeah, that's it. I'm being nice to you. I don't know why, because...
There's a bombshell to end an episode on. Jesse's being nice to Ellie May. We should put her ahead and leave.
I don't know why, because she's currently...
Whipping your ass?
1 point ahead of me. So this will be the point that sort of opens it up by a further gap. And
I really hope you win by a point, Ellie May, by the end of the year. You'll regret it so much.
All those times I've been nice to you. You have to win magnanimously.
I mean, I have the other 2 years, so... I even gave you a head start in the first year, 2022.
Yeah, that is
Verstappen.
Fair enough. Yeah, fine. Right. Does someone want to start doing the wrap up? Because I forgot to try and find a town.
Yes, okay, that's all we've got time for on this week's episode. We'll be back for the review of the Miami Grand Prix. In the meantime, Ellie May, where can the people find you?
You can find me at Donington Historic, where I've had a look at some of the cars entering, and there'll be a Bentley 3 litre and a Bentley 4.5 litre, and I'm quite excited to see them on top of seeing hopefully Bentley Speed 8 and their prototype as well.
Very nice.
Yes.
Jesse, where can the people find you?
The people can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. Latest issue is out at the moment. It is a Triumph special looking back at all of the Mark's pre-war cars. Plus, there is the opportunity to buy Austin Rover, which sounds far-fetched, but genuinely, you can, in a no-reserve auction coming up with Iconic Auctioneers, buy the title rights to the Mark or Austin Rover and the rights to make the Metro 6R4 rally car. So if you fancy doing that, help yourself. It's going up for auction. Check Iconic Auctioneers. You get the full sort of ownership of the business plus the blueprints and the ability to do it. You could also probably bring back any Austin Rover car that you really wanted to. So sort of Montego, I suppose. Metro. You could
revolutionize this brand and bring it back to life.
Enter it into Formula One. We need
Lola.
Yeah, we need somewhere for Adrian Newey to go, and if it's making a very aerodynamic...
I'll lure him with a Rover F1 disc.
we'd have to wait and see. Timo, where can people find you?
This week, I shall plug the Nitro RX podcast because we have some interviews coming out there with Ellis Bietzer, Texas Dave, and Eric Gordon. All very fun and interesting conversations there with kind of wildly different conversations. You've got someone who went from nearly being in Formula E to Nitro Cross. You've got someone who's got a brilliant ranch just outside of Cota. And you've got Eric Gordon, who he's just happy to be racing. He's a pure racer. He just really likes to go racing.
Very nice indeed. And we ought to say a big hello to our listeners in Carroll, Iowa. Hello to potentially all 10,321 of you. It is a proper city. It was first founded in laid out in 1867. There we go. I knew I'd find some facts about Carroll, Indiana. Not hugely interesting, but there we go. I forgot to do that ahead of the...
Give me another fun fact about what happened in 1867, was it?
1867. It took name from Carroll County, which was named in honor of Charles Carroll of Carrollton, Maryland. He was the only Roman Catholic to sign the Declaration of Independence. There you go. I knew you'd find a fun fact in there somewhere.
And it was 23 years before the Sherman antitrust laws came in that Andretti kind of used to screw over at one.
Of course, when it comes to signing declarations of something, we've covered a lot of that in this week's podcast. So it does actually neatly wrap up the podcast. And we'll be back following the Miami Grand Prix and with hopefully plenty to talk about. If not, it'll be a far shorter podcast than this one. Thank you very much for listening and we'll see you again soon.
I've got family heritage with the surname Carroll.